From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The last time Utah had a Democrat in a statewide office was 16 years ago. Right now, Democrats have just 12 of 75 seats in the state legislature. They won 10 of the 55 contested races in last year's election. And in most of those cases, they got clobbered. Outside of Salt Lake City or Park City, if you're a Dem in Utah, you can forget about it. And why? Well, it seems obvious. It's a conservative state, has been for a long time. But how much of this is the Democratic Party's own doing? In the National Party, there's this growing rift between the progressive faction and establishment Democrats. So is the same thing happening here, too? Not fielding enough candidates who are less, you know, liberal and more, you know, Mormon? Is the Democratic Party in this state relevant? We're talking about it today, after the news.
Take Radio West wherever you go with KUER's mobile app for Android and iPhone. Public radio is always a swipe away with KUER's mobile app, free and available for download right now in your mobile phone's app store.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The reason Democrats in Utah don't do so well these days is, well, it's complicated. Utah is pretty conservative, so there's that. But that cannot be the only reason, especially now that political trends seem to be shifting and Donald Trump's support here is kind of fragile. Maybe it's party organization that's wanting or a lack of appealing candidates. State Senator Jim DeBacchus told us recently a story that may offer another reason. He talked about when he was chair of the party, traveled to Carbon County and made this hard sell about the need to end fossil fuels and transform the economy. He talked about how one woman in the crowd stood up. She was really emotional. She was holding a piece of coal in her hands. And she told the senator that was how she and many others in the region send their kids to school. And that his message, made from someone who drove down from Salt Lake City, didn't show a proper kind of respect for people who make a living. And Obaka says Democrats need to be more willing to listen to people, to recognize that the ideas in Salt Lake City just might be different in rural Utah or in suburban Utah. So today in the program, we are talking about the state of the Democratic Party in Utah, why it doesn't seem to be getting any traction. We should also mention the what happened over the weekend. Of course, the party met in their state convention. The lead up to the convention, there was a new chair of the party. That was very rancorous. The early favorite to win was a man named Rob Miller, until seven women, including former Salt Lake County Democratic Party chairwoman, accused Miller of sexual harassment. The divisive. Now, he's, reacting to all of that and denying this. The divisive atmosphere, though, continued into the convention this weekend. Protesters apparently turned their backs on some people defending Miller. In the end, the convention elected Daisy Thomas to lead the party. Thomas is a Democratic activist who helped organize the Utah for Bernie Sanders office here, served as a precinct chair. So there's a setup for what's going on. Let me introduce the panel who's going to join us today to talk about all of this. Mayor Ben McAdams is with us, of course, the mayor of Salt Lake County. And Mayor, welcome back. Thanks for being
here.
Thanks,
Doug. Great to be on.
We have Morgan Lyon Cotty with us, Associate Director of the University of Utah's Hinckley Institute of Politics. Welcome back to you.
Thank you.
We have Jim DeBacchus, I mentioned him, a Democrat in the state Senate representing the 2nd District.
Good morning, Doug.
Welcome back. And Quinn Monson is back with us, a political scientist, founding partner of the research and data firm Y2 Analytics, which we should point out conducted research for the campaign of Mia Love, the Republican representative of Utah's 4th Congressional District, as well as John Curtis, the mayor of Provo and a candidate in the Republican primary to fill the seat of outgoing Republican Jason Chaffetz. So wanted to get that out of the way. Professor, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
Well, Morgan, let me begin with you, and I want to hear you all on this, but if you were worried about the fortunes of the Democratic Party, would you be even more worried after what happened over the weekend?
I'm not sure, because it's really interesting. We have had some really rancorous conventions, and I think the split, even nationwide, that we saw last year with the Bernie versus Hillary Clinton campaigns. But when it comes down to it, Utah Democrats, much more so than Utah Republicans, come November, they vote pretty tightly as a block. So I think there's multiple answers. I mean, when we're talking about the organization of the party and electoral results, I think when you dive down, it could be troublesome. But come November, they vote pretty tightly.
But okay, but you've got a leader of a party now who, okay, so you mentioned this national disconnect going on within the Democratic Party. You've got, on one hand, establishment Democrats, let's call them a Hillary wing, right? And then you have the Bernie Sanders wing, which is far more left of center. Is that what's going on in Utah to some degree? Forget about what they may do in November right now. It seems like there are these factions there.
Yeah, I'm recalling attending the 2016 our caucus that we had really in lieu of a primary. And I was in Bountiful, Utah, trying to understand how the Democratic line was going around the block, and that I was pretty sure I could identify the five people there who were going to vote for Hillary. It was a Bernie crowd in Davis County. And this is an issue certainly for Democrats nationwide. We saw the biggest generation gap in Democrats since the Vietnam era. But when we look at the people that are currently elected and for the Democratic Party in Utah, I don't necessarily see that big divide. I don't see people saying, they are that Bernie wing. They are that left wing. I don't see that here in Utah.
Okay, so is this a myth, Jim DeBacus, that there is a faction in the Democratic Party that is holding sway, that is more liberal than the state in general, and is keeping the party from getting any traction?
Lately, yes, of course. I mean, there they are. And to deny that there were Bernie people and that they're restless and that they are they want a revolution and that they just don't like the way things are going really is to not see the world the way it really is. So I see this as more of a generational thing than one candidate or another. I see that this group of people kind of the way we old people were in the 60s during that kind of protest, they're out there. They want to take power. And guess what they did? They took power. And it happened Saturday. There's not one person over 40. Some of them are very young. And they hold the four offices in our party. And the way I'm looking at it, you know what? We've been a generation that just plain didn't win elections. We didn't live up to our billing. And so more power to them. They're there. They're going to have my support. Let's give them a shot because everything else we tried didn't work. And I couldn't be more pleased. And I'm there with my $100 a month to help them out and whatever else they need. Let's go for it.
But Quinn Monson, is it good for the party? Now you have a leader of the party who was a national delegate for Bernie Sanders. Is that good for a party that's trying to reach to moderate voters to get?
I'm not so sure it matters that much because it depends on what that person says and does. And so we can wait and see. I think it's important to take a step back and realize that the numbers in Utah don't favor Democrats. They're at a huge disadvantage. Partisan identification is a powerful drug, right? It's hard to overcome the effects of it. And it takes a concerted effort over a fairly long period of time. So if you have a party, Republicans, that have a maybe 2-1, even 3-1 advantage in terms of identification among the electorate, you've got to get some Republican voters to vote for your candidate if you're going to have any chance. And the only way to do that, because I don't think converting them over to the Democratic Party is a viable strategy. That's not going to happen. You can wait for generational replacement. You can wait for younger people to come in and be Democrats.
Which is coming, but
maybe,
not yet.
Maybe. But okay. It takes a long time, right? Yeah. It's going to take years for that if it's going to happen, and that's a big question mark. The only other strategy then is to nominate candidates who can appeal to the more moderate voices in the Republican Party. And there have been some examples of that in Utah in the past. And that's the path forward. And it's a question of Democrats who are quite liberal deciding, do I want to be right or do I want to win? And when they want to win, then they'll start nominating people that can win elections.
Let me hear from the mayor, and then you can all just sort of jump in on this. Is that true? Is that the choice?
You know, I think there's something bigger going on here. I see a disruption of the political scene nationally, and it's happening here locally. And I think that those of us who have been in party politics for a while, we try to couch it into this left versus right. And I just think there's something bigger going on. I look at the new crop, this new crop of millennials. Yes, many of them were inspired and rallied behind Bernie Sanders. What you saw nationally is when Bernie was out of the race, they went to Trump.
Yeah.
And so there's something here that's more than just left-right politics and a linear scale on the political spectrum.
Is it populism?
I think it's populism. I think it's we see this whether it's in politics or religion or the economic sector. People, there's a distrust for establishment and the status quo and a rejection of the choices that are forced upon people. They want their own choices in the world, and they want to carve their own path. And so I think it's a complete disruption that we've seen in the American society, and it's starting to hit on the shores of politics. And what that means, I don't think we know yet. I think we're seeing that. We're seeing this rejection of establishment and rejection of the status quo. I don't think it's a left versus right and center. I think we're in a whole three-dimensional world, and it's not just this linear spectrum.
That'll get us to – I actually want to hold this question off for just a moment, but because I want you to draft for me an ideal candidate. And some say, Mayor, that you are the ideal candidate. I think Quinn Monson says that you are the ideal candidate for the Democratic Party. But just hold that thought for a moment. And I wanted to get a sense of your sense, all of you, of the history of the Democratic Party. It wasn't so long ago, Morgan, that the party was really viable. There was, you know, we had statewide offices if you were a Democrat. The Democrats held the legislature. It's been a while since they held much sway in the legislature, but it hasn't been that long ago. And I just wanted to get all of your sense is, what did they do right at that time, or is that not a proper question given that the landscape has changed so much?
Yeah, I think the question might be, honestly, what went wrong? When I look at the history, because you're right, we had this very competitive legislature where when we had majorities between Democrats and Republicans through the 40s, 50s, 60s, and even 70s, they were pretty slim. They could get bigger, but they were trading majority-minority all the time. But since 1979, Republicans have had control of both houses in the legislature. And I think if you look at some of the events around that time, I think you see why, especially LDS voters in the state, really just aligned with the Republican Party and have stayed there. And we saw the debates over
abortion rights. Okay, yeah.
The debates over the Equal Rights Amendment. And really, it came down to LDS voters who are socially conservative saw where the Republican Party was on those issues and aligned with them. And that's compounded by the fact that Reagan had, you know, our Reagan Revolution. We had Reagan Democrats, all of these people aligned. And politics shifts. It's a pendulum. It goes back and forth. But by the time it came back to perhaps Democrats should have been making a resurgence in Utah in the 90s, they didn't give LDS voters a reason to want to go back. They stayed entrenched in the Republican Party and are still very closely aligned in that party.
Is that right, Senator, do you think?
Well, I think we start with a bad assumption here, and everybody is, that this is so overwhelmingly a Republican state. And they look at the seats in the legislature as evidence. You know, we haven't had a majority since 1979. If you really look at the numbers, true, it's very difficult statewide for Democrats to be competitive. But something dramatic has been happening in 1980, 1990, and 2000, and 2010. I mean, if you don't remember any numbers from this discussion, remember this. Utah Democrats get 38% to 42% of the votes in legislative races. 38, let's say 40%. 40%. So in a representative form of government, that means 40% of the seats in the legislature ought to go to Democrats. But like some banana republic, like Putin would be proud of these numbers. We're at 21 or 22% of the seats. It is not as overwhelmingly Republican as people think.
It is,
gerrymandering has been a catastrophe, and it raises its ugly head. They're getting ready to raise it again. And if you look at those legislative numbers, there should be a lot more Democrats there, and there would be if the Republicans weren't targeting and building these maps in such an ugly way.
I think Jim's leaving out a bunch of zeros where races are going uncontested when he's doing his math there. It's not a 40%.
And I looked at those numbers this morning because I was so curious to see if that would come up. And in 2016, 70% of legislative votes went to GOP candidates, and they hold 82-83% of the seats in the state house. So
that's in 1 year, but you go back historically. And the gap is even wider. There's no relationship between the number of votes and the number of seats, and you put that back to gerrymandering. It's a big issue.
Actually, I think you lay it at the feet of we have a plurality winner system, vote system. If you want a proportional representation, you got to go to some kind of proportional vote system, and that's not what we have. So you're going to get a disproportionate result when you take a majority winner or a plurality winner in any district.
I'm just talking about basic, honest-to-goodness fairness. As we talk about, there aren't Democrats out there. They're out there.
But their voice has been minimized, and consequently,
the state has this one-party momentum that builds.
But that minimization is exacerbated by the supermajority status in terms of the electorate. So when you have a district that is on balance Republican in terms of party registration or party identification, even if it's only 51%, 52%, they're going to elect a Republican more likely than not.
But I just want to bring it back to what it is the Democrats may or may not be doing. Okay, so let's say there's a structural problem with redistricting. That's one of the reasons. I won't dismiss that, but let's bring this back to what it is the Democrats may or may not be doing right or wrong, or when they started to do it right or wrong. The momentum that began in the late 70s. Over a lot of these, some of these were the big social issues. Certainly for Mormons, I think that was a big deal. Mayor McAdams, what could the Democrats have started to do then, or what could they be doing even now to be more attractive to, say, Mormon voters?
Well, I think I would say the Democratic Party has lost its way in the last couple of decades, and part of that, I think we are Democrats in many ways because we believe in the little guy and we're fighting for the little guy and opportunity for all, and those are values that I espouse and really I think are values the Democratic Party espouses. But I think we allowed ourselves to be defined exclusively by those social issues and gave up the ground of the little guy, meaning the working class, or what's the Utah Democratic position on education, be it K-12 or higher education? What are Democrats going to do to bridge the economic divide, to help blue collar families in Utah and nationally to succeed? And so, while I wouldn't advocate for stepping away from those social issues, I think that's some of the in our DNA and why we are Democrats. I think we have abandoned fighting for many of those issues that are going to appeal to middle America. I think many in middle America, I don't think the average American is a bigot or a racist. I think but they do want to know how they're going to pay for their kids' education and if they're going to be able to send their child to college, if they're going to be able to put food on the table. And those are the issues that I think the Democratic Party has ceded territory. And that's where I think we've largely lost favor. It's starting here in Utah, but we're now seeing it nationally that we've lost favor with middle America.
Senator, it goes back to that story I told that you told to us earlier, last week it was, about going down to Carbon County. There's a message.
Brand name is bad, and it shouldn't be. I was down in Iron County, and it was a little breakfast with a group of Democrats down there. This was when I was party chair, and a guy came up to me, and he said, after I finished, and he quietly said, "Senator, I'm gay." I said, "Well, that must be tough down here in Iron County, the suburbs of Iron County." And he said, "Yeah." He said, "I don't tell anybody." I said, "Yeah, well, I understand that." And he said, "Yeah, I don't tell them I'm gay because then they know I'm a Democrat." it really is too bad, because if you take a poll, and I'd be interested to hear the good professor's take on this. If you take a poll and you talk to people about public lands and they want things protected and they want outdoor recreation, or you talk to them about clean air, are you willing to sacrifice for it, or more money, actually tax raises for education or Medicaid expansion, and you just ask people blindly, they are there with the Democrats. They're there in reasonably large numbers. But we frittered this away. We don't have a way to communicate. We don't have a way to get that across. That, by the way, you Utah are really for Utah State Democratic Party values. We want Medicaid expansion. The state is hysterical and in large numbers wants it. And the Republican majority just stubs their nose at the people of Utah on so many issues and get away with it. We have dropped the ball.
How? How have you frittered it away? In what way?
We don't focus in. We don't blame the people. A group of Republicans met for 6 or 7 months in a back room, a smoke-filled room in the Capitol, all Republicans, all men, and they tried to work out Medicaid expansion with the governor. And you know what? They couldn't do it. And they walked away and were losing hundreds of millions of dollars a year of money we're paying in. Somehow we didn't get that message across.
So you haven't been able to generate more outrage. This is something you are pretty good at.
But
you want more Jim DeBacchus.
You want to know what our politicians are lousy at? On Medicaid expansion, they're talking about percentage of the poverty level, and they're down in the grass and in the weeds, and they're talking about little minutiae of policy and debating on that, and they're not saying enough, you know what? It's $745 million a year. You know, we're lousy debaters. We get down into the nooks and crannies of policy and the public loses it. We've done a lousy job of getting our message across that we're actually with the people of Utah on so many issues.
I'm going to agree with that. I think that we are lousy communicators and we're not getting our message across. I think we're debating the public, the single payer option of the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, and then we get into those weeds. Really what we need to be talking about is the failure to provide access to treatment has made our communities unsafe. That we are seeing and will see an uptick in crime because of the legislatures and the governor's inability to expand health care access and treatment. We passed the Justice Reinvestment Initiative that sends thousands of people out of the state correction systems to the streets of our communities, and we are unsafe because of that. And we need to do a better job of communicating the consequences, the real consequences to mainstream Utah of the poor decisions that have been made in the state over several decades. And we need to do better.
Can I jump in on this?
Please, yeah. I want to hear your response.
Because I think there's a kernel of truth to what Jim and Ben have been saying, but I would modify it just a bit and say that what I see the state Democratic Party doing and office holders doing is reacting to the Republicans but swinging too far back in the other direction. And so it is true that Utahns see a huge problem with clean air. It is true that Utahns favor preservation of public lands, but they don't favor a unilateral decision by the president to declare the monument, and they don't favor single payer health care from the federal government, right? So what do they favor? Well, I think they do favor some kind of Medicaid expansion. I think they do favor protection of the land, but with local control.
Democrats have got to be able to find policies that fit somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This very moderate sort of positioning is to the left of, I think, a lot of our Republican leadership in the legislature, but it's not that far to the left.
And without going too hard on Republican leadership as well, because Democrats, if you're going for statewide office or those Democrats that we've seen win congressional races, Jim Matheson, Bill Orton, they had a lot of Republican voters. So you can't go, as Senator DeBacchus was saying, they do need to call out those policies and those people they disagree with, but not so harshly that they alienate those Republican voters.
Let me read a couple of comments. This comes from Patrice, who writes, as a newish delegate, I was disappointed by both the county and state conventions this year. In both cases, the convention seemed to be a private soiree for established buddies within the party. The state convention seemed especially chaotic with a lack of communication between candidate speakers and those who made and enforced the time limits. This from, I'm not sure the name here, but it's, I'm a Mormon. I find the party that best represents my values overall is the Democratic Party. I think the party needs to explain itself better to Mormons now that abortion and gay marriage are basically moot issues. Personally, I'm baffled as to why most Mormons are so politically conservative, mentions things like economic equality and helping other people. So we're getting that same kind of sense. Okay, let's take a break and we'll come back for some more thoughts here in just a moment. We have the mayor of Salt Lake County with us, Ben McAdams. We have Democratic State Senator Jim DeBacchus with us. Morgan Lyon-Cotty is also here, Associate Director of the University of Utah's Hinckley Institute of Politics, and political scientist Quinn Monson also with us. You can join us, by the way, 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. You can hear the talking. We're still continuing the conversation. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, asking if the Democratic Party in the state is relevant anymore. If not, why not? Some of this makes sense, of course. Utah's been decidedly red for years now, but are there openings? Have there been openings that the Democratic Party is not taking advantage of? The mayor of Salt Lake County is with us, Ben McAdams. We have Jim DeBacchus with us, Democrat in the state Senate. We have Morgan Lyon-Cotty, who is the associate director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. And we also have Quinn Monson, political scientist and founding partner of the research and data firm Y2 Analytics. Okay, let me get to this question of recruiting candidates. Here's a question from Kate that writes, does Utah have a history of putting forward progressive candidates that are actually qualified for office? People who have the relevant experience on the resume, how can we know that progressive candidates won't work here if we don't put quality progressive people forward?
Well, this is one candidate for the UTA board that's progressive that clearly wasn't qualified for that. But
qualified in other ways.
Look, we're not dealing very often on a statewide basis. And where Democrats can and should and must be moving forward are in those 10 or 12 legislative seats where we are competitive, that should be Democratic places and that Republicans are sitting in. The problem with that is the Republicans that sit there are reasonably moderate because they know what kind of district they're in. And they're the hard ones for Democrats to beat because everybody goes, well, they're okay. If we're going to take back the state, it's not going to be some giant landslide when we wake up and we have six or seven statewide offices. It's going to come when Democrats start looking at the territories they can win in Weber County, in the west side of Salt Lake, in Summit County, in Carbon County, and where we claim our territory, and then we grow out. So that's where we need to work. That's where the rubber meets the road. And if the district calls for a progressive voice, let it be. And if it calls for a more conservative voice, let it be. That's the way we're going to go forward.
Is party leadership cultivating those kinds of conservative voices?
They've only been in office for 2 or 3 days. We'll
see. It's true. Has it traditionally is the question, I guess.
Well, I think we can do – I think we've put forward some good candidates. I think there's a tired saying in the Democratic Party that if only we were more liberal, we would have that upswell of support that would turn out and sweep us into elections. And we say that. We've said that many, many times, and that's why we keep putting forward the most liberal candidate. And I think this is a recreation of that same question, that maybe the problem isn't that we haven't put forward liberal enough candidates because we've been doing that in recent years, but maybe liberal and qualified seems to be what the question is addressing. Really, what our challenge is we're not putting forward candidates that connect with voters in those swing districts. And we are the districts we win, we're connecting with the people in those districts.
So you need to be more surgical, more strategic.
Well, I think so. I think we need to have candidates who reflect the values of the district they're trying to win. In the last election, Democrats hold 12 seats in the House of Representatives. There are 29 House seats in Salt Lake County. Of those 29, I won 23 of them. Not to pat myself on the back, but there's a winning message where we can pick up seats that we're not picking up right now. And I think we need to have candidates who reflect the values of the district they're campaigning to represent. And then we have to have a well-organized ground game to get that message out.
Could that work?
Yeah, it could. Certainly, they wouldn't do worse than they're doing now. So one example I would point to of a really good candidate, Suzanne Harrison, mm-hmm. who took LeVar Christensen down to
six
the wires.
Or three votes.
Six.
Or
when it was all done, it was six votes.
Yeah.
She was ahead on election night. But counting and recounting produced a 6-vote loss. Very strong novice candidate, but highly qualified. I think gave a reasonable, moderate voice. And here's a plug for what candidates like that do for democracy in Utah. I think what they do is they force Republicans who are pretty conservative to reexamine where they're at and to moderate a little bit. So even if you don't succeed, what do? You pull Republicans in from the far right and you force party nominating systems to reconsider whether they want to nominate that candidate that's way out there. And I think we end up with a better legislature and better governance overall. So I as a Republican sitting here talking about the state Democratic Party, I'd like to see a stronger state Democratic Party, because I think it would make the Republican Party better and more reasonable. And I think that would be good for Utah.
801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Let's take a call. Jose is joining us in Provo. Jose, you still with us? Probably not. I think I made him hold for too long. Let's see. Jose, try to call back. Let me paraphrase your question. This Jose says he was a co-chair or co-vice chair for Democrats. I'm guessing in Utah County. Said they had a good chance in 2010. The Democrats did after Obama got elected. New crop of candidates, all were former Republicans, came very close. Does anyone want to comment on, again, maybe frittering away the chances when they were there?
Yeah, Utah County has recruited some good candidates from time to time, and they have come close, and I think they've had that moderating effect down there. You've seen some of those legislators realize they need to reach out more to the public. But I think that maybe speaks to a broader issue that the Democrats need to address, and that is reaching out not only philosophically, but how do we reach out to Mormon voters? I'm practicing Mormon myself, and I think that, and I know in my congregation, people... They are skeptical. They're resistant to voting for the Democratic Party, and it takes some time. And we need to figure out how to reach out to Mormon voters in a way that where they feel comfortable crossing the aisle and supporting a Democrat.
I've heard it called the Diet Coke Mormons, that are willing to open up and perhaps vote for a Democrat. Maybe they're hitting Republican everywhere else on their ballot, but they might, hey, that person seemed more moderate. I think I align with that person a little more democratically. And they'll vote for them. And the person I actually heard that from was Jacqueline Orton, the widow mm-hmm. of the late Congressman Bill Orton. And he won Utah County. I think his first election was against Carl Snow, who I believe was a professor at Brigham Young University. But Bill Orton, he was single at the time, but he could speak. He was a tax attorney, I believe. So he could speak economics. He could talk about those economic issues that people cared about, but then he could also speak about those LDS values and convince people that he represented that.
And he was LDS himself.
Absolutely.
The lesson we learned from Bill Orton, and I think from Jim Matheson later in 2000, is that Democrats need to nominate reasonable candidates who can take advantage of situations where the Republicans nominate somebody who's weakened. So in the Carl Snow case, he had faced a bruising primary, and some of the opposition from the primary didn't want to get behind him. And they looked over to the Democratic Party, and they saw a candidate that was reasonable, that they liked. In the Jim Matheson case, Merrill Cook had melted down in office, and they had replaced him with another nominee on the ballot, Derek Smith. And again, Republicans looked at their nominee and said, looked over and saw somebody that was reasonable that they could vote for. I think Republicans have nominated other weak candidates who have gotten through, because when voters have looked at that candidate and then looked across the aisle and said, but that candidate's not ready for prime time. That candidate's too far left, and they're not ready to take advantage of those moments when they come.
We need a breakthrough LDS person. The LDS first presidency and the 12 are basically all registered, either Republicans or non-affiliated. And when I was party chair, I think I can tell this story now. I'll tell it anyway. Marlon Jensen was retiring, a beloved, for those of you that aren't LDS, I think it's fair to say he's beloved not only as a general authority, but as a great speaker and as a kind man. He was a general authority and the church historian, I think. Yeah. So I called Elder Jensen and said, look, the congressional seat in the 2nd District is open. Run. you would be it. Look at the buffoons we have. Imagine you standing there among all of them. You're the person. You've got to run. He said, well, I can't remember the exact thing, but he wasn't going to be emeritus until a month or two after the filing deadline. So I went to see high church leaders. And I sat down and I said, look, this is going to change everything. He needs to run. So release him early or do whatever you got to do. We got to get this done. So I got a call from Elder Jensen a little while later and went into his office and he pulled out a piece of paper and he put it down and he said, do you know what this is? And I said, I have no idea what this is. He said, it's the minutes of the first presidency. I said, wow, what is that? He said, that's basically how things are run. I said, yeah, well, what does this have to do with me? He said, are you trying to get back tithing from me? Is that where we're going? And he said, no. He said, this says Elder Marlon K. Jensen is, I can't remember the words, but something like encouraged to run for political office and will be whatever it is. And I said, what could be there? What could be stronger? There it is, the first presidency. What do you want, a written invitation? There it is. And he said, well, I'm just retiring and I blah, 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 blah. But there it was. If Marlon Jensen was sitting there instead of Stewart and all of his problems, what a difference that would make to LDS people. What a difference it would make in the U.S. Congress. What a difference it would make in the Democratic Party. That's who we need. We need that breakthrough issue that allows all those Diet Coke Mormons to go, wait a minute, this is wrong. So I am appealing now. We need that person. We need that person that believes in our democratic values and can get up and speak and be recognized as a great person. Elder Jensen, it's not too late. You're up in here in Huntsville. You got to be bored a little bit. It's not too late to come trotting out and save the republic by the thread that it's hanging. So that's my pitch.
Well, I thought Ben McAdams was the model candidate. I mean, active Latter-day Saint.
For the Senate, don't you think? I think running against Hatch, how would that be?
It's your chance to make news right now, Ben. Here we go.
How would that be? Nobody would whisper in your ear, my name is Ben McAdams. I mean, you could do that.
What is the thing that you say to Latter-day Saint voters?
You let them off the hook.
I did let him off the hook. Yeah, you wouldn't have gone on that?
I'm not going to take that.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Yeah. Now we have
demurring
it.
Demurring even before he said anything. And I want to hear you all on this. What is the appeal that you make to Latter-day Saint voters who might be independent, might be inclined to be vote Democratic, maybe younger voters, millennials who are thinking of distancing themselves from their parents' political ideas? It seems to be what do you say to them? Because there are the social issues. Abortion obviously comes up. Same-sex marriage obviously comes up. What do you say to them? What's the appeal?
I say that Democrats are the right party to vote for if you want to talk about education and creating opportunity for our kids and for the next generation. That creating good paying jobs in Utah, we need balance in this state. We need a vision for the economy that's more than just shelling out corporate incentives to attract high profile names for our state's resume. But what's our state's policy on economic development? What are we going to do to expand access to health care? Bring it back to the issues that people understand, the reasons that people stay up at night. It's not the fringe issues that matter to all of us. Some of those fringe issues matter to me, but bring it back to public safety. Bring it back to clean air. Bring it back to things that people really care about.
Quinn, what do you think about that?
I think that the first thing I would do is to not make it about the Democratic Party at all. I would make it about the Republican Party and I would find examples and point to office holders who are too extreme and point to my reasonable positions otherwise and not make it about party labels. If you make it about party labels, that just reminds people where their longstanding preferences are and that's where they go home to. I think the person I've seen do this the best in the state was Jim Matheson, who could run as a Democrat without being a Democrat, and remind Republican voters that they actually agreed with him, but not because he was a Democrat, just because he was being sensible.
Well, I want to take that a step further. I'm not even sure that you make it about not being a Republican, because for many people, this is a multi-generational affiliation with the Republican Party that they care deeply about. And in my elections, I say I haven't won elections because I'm a Democrat, and I haven't run against the Republican Party. I've run on my platform and what I stand for. And you look
– Well, what's on your billboards? Different.
I'm different.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah.
And try to say how I'm different. And you look at, you know, I outperformed the presidential ticket by 20 percentage points. So for me, that weighs heavy also in how I govern, that one third of people who voted for Trump crossed over and voted for me. You know, a third of the people who voted for Romney crossed over and voted for me. I can't govern as the mayor of Democrats. I got to govern as the mayor of the people of Salt Lake County and be independent.
What does that mean, though? I mean, how do you translate that? How do you take that and impose that on someone else's race? How do you tutor them? How do you teach them? I mean, what are the values of being different that you can share with the Democratic Party generally, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a Republican state. The legislature is an 80% majority Republican legislature. One of the things that I've campaigned on is my ability to reach across party lines and to get things done. And I have a track record of getting things done both as a state senator and as the mayor, that I get things done with Republican support. If it's me versus the Republican Party, then that's going to mean gridlock, and nobody wants to have the challenges unaddressed. And so I know that a lot of the people who are going to be voting for me are going to be voting the rest of their ticket for Republicans. So if it is a partisan alignment, either on one side or the other, against the Republican Party mm-hmm. or for the Democratic Party, that's a hard line to cross if you have to win every election up and down the ballot in order to get my vote. But to make that distinction that it's okay to cross over, it's okay to vote for me as a Democrat, because I'm going to work to address the challenges in our community. I'm going to be able to get it done.
It's so interesting, too, because you think on one hand that you're saying reach across the aisle, but then you hear from Jim DeBacchus, who says we need to generate more outrage when some of the things happen at the state legislature. So how can you –
Look, we're in two different worlds here.
Yeah.
Ben is talking – to the voters in Salt Lake County or to the voters in Carbon County or Utah County. My constituency and the third of the state that are really progressive, for once, they want to hear one voice. They want to hear one person stand up and say, you know what? This and this and this and this and this. That's my job.
But the problem with that is that it muddies the brand name of the party.
Well, I'm not the party chair anymore.
Doesn't matter.
So, you know, but
you're a party office holder.
But does that outrage alienate those perspective?
Well,
but
we went 30 years without anybody standing up and saying, you know what, progressives, we have a voice. We're going to be there. And you know what? They may not like this in St. George or in Logan, but somebody needs to rally. That is a different voice than Ben's.
Marvin, what do you
think?
But
it muddies the water, and I think it affects people's willingness to support Democratic candidates.
So that's a bit of a Republican saying I should muzzle myself, because it makes the Republicans
Somebody who wants to be right over who wants to win.
Hold on. Let me take a call, because this sort of goes to the issue and. Senator DeBacchus, you're a big boy, so you can take this critique. This is from Bobby in Salt Lake City. Bobby, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me, Doug.
Sure.
Senator DeBacchus, I'm actually a member of your constituency, and I've been concerned over the past several years that your outbursts have created a political liability, and I'm wondering about specifically regarding air quality, for example, having met with multiple people on the Hill over the past 18 months lobbying for air quality reform. Many have said that the fact that you had introduced lobbyist legislation literally tainted and doomed this legislation from the start. And so I'd like to hear from the rest of the panel whether or not your outbursts are actually politically effective, because at the end of the day, it's about, I believe, about policy being pushed through and actually getting legislative gains as opposed to, you know, having a voice on the Hill. Just want to hear the rest of the panel's thoughts on that and how you personally, Senator DeBacchus, think that's effective.
Right. Well, hold off. Morgan, you want to say something about that? Because that does seem to be the balance. It's interesting we have Mayor McAdams sitting next to Jim DeBacchus. You have on one hand someone who's saying we need to generate more outrage, we need to speak out, we need to be more engaged. And Mayor McAdams is saying maybe we need to be more conciliatory and maybe...
I don't know if conciliatory is the word.
Okay. Right, what is the word?
I think it's a consensus building.
Okay, right? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, trying to build that coalition. One of the things that's coming to mind as we're talking about this is what I was hearing Richard Davis say last week, who's been a longtime Democrat, has written books about being a Democratic Mormon, a professor down at BYU, and he's starting this new United Utah Party. Yeah. And one of the things he says is, I want Utah to be a two-party system again, a two-party state, with the Republican Party and the United Utah Party, because he feels that the Democrats have alienated, they're too liberal. And when I look at, this is something I was trying to get at earlier, when I look at the elected officials and a lot of the people running in Utah, they are not these firebrand left-wing candidates. They are more of the Ben McAdams. They're the people in the legislature that, despite being what Brian King calls the super minority, have figured out how to negotiate and compromise. But then when we're talking about the Democratic leadership and party in the state, and we're talking about these young Bernie supporters that are now the leadership, I think that is tricky, and as Quinn says, that does muddy the waters. And this is just this fine line that Democrats are having to tread of how do I build a coalition while also going after the Republicans, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. what is our message? What is our brand?
Do you need both?
I was going to say, yeah, I think we need both.
Yeah, is it this full court press where you're trying to grab different type of Democratic voters?
Jim and I are close friends, and I want to come to his defense in this. I think a little bit you need both. I think, yes, Jim probably alienates the voters that I've won in West Jordan and South Jordan. I represented – Jim took my place in the state Senate. When I was elected mayor, he took my space. So I've represented his district. He is representative of a super majority of his district who appreciates the voice that he raises. Now, he may tarnish the brand a little bit and alienate some voters out in some of the in the suburbs. I think that's probably true. But what he's also doing is bringing new people into the party who are inspired. There is an outrage, and these people are coming to the party, expressing their outrage. They're active and they're engaged. And I think it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but I think he does add value, and he is winning. Maybe not by passing legislation, but I think he's winning.
Let me provide a contrast, though. So without going after Jim, there's no need to do that.
I can't believe how quiet you're being.
The contrast is between Rocky Anderson and Ralph Becker, who I don't distinguish ideologically or position-wise, right? They were very similar in terms of what they wanted Salt Lake City to do.
But very different in their approach.
Very different in their style and their approach. And I see Ralph Becker as having accomplished a lot more by being, I think the right word is conciliatory in that, but without compromising who he was ideologically. So I don't know that it has to be compromising your politics, but there is a matter of style and choosing your battles and choosing when to put yourself in the spotlight and not, and choosing who's the right spokesperson for the issue and so on that I think matters.
Yeah, it is the guys like Quinn, the Republican guys that I'm trying to modify and get to. The truth is, on gay marriage, Senator, just shut up. A lot of the people just don't agree with that. Go in your little cubbyhole. You're going to message the wrong thing there. We don't want to get that message out. Or on 0.5 alcohol. No, don't bring that up. It's just going to irritate people. You know what? That's bull. Nobody is speaking up on a lot of issues where the little old boys in the back room just come marching out, and we're all supposed to go, yeah, let's be nice, let's not bring it up, it'll just embarrass them and irritate them. I think that's why we have 30 years of Republican control, because nobody's saying, you know what, there's a contrast, there's another side here. And when it comes to conciliation, you notice Senator Backus's name was not on the non-discriminant employment and housing. His name wasn't there. There was nowhere. There were two senators on there. For the first time in the history of the Senate, two senators sponsored a bill, the Senator Urquhart and Senator Adams, and I was fine with that. But I spent hours and months and years getting that concession down. So don't throw me in with Rocky Anderson and people that don't know how to sit down and negotiate and make a deal and how to sit down and get things done. Because on issue after issue, yes, I fight for my people and my principles, but I am not a bomb thrower, and I recognize that we need to sit down eventually and come to a consensus. But you don't have a consensus when you only have one point of view going in, like Medicaid expansion.
Okay, tidy things up here towards the end. I want to look forward a little bit. And Morgan, let me start with you. And Quinn, I want to hear you about this question too. The sort of generational replacement that seems to be going on. Where is the political trend these days? Is it heading toward and maybe down the line, as Quinn says, but is it heading toward the Democratic Party in some way?
So young voters are always more Democratic, more liberal, and we're seeing some polling that says that even young LDS voters are more Democratic, that they're a little more evenly split than older generations. And this is something that has been brought up. One of the really interesting things about younger voters, and you see this with the data, and I hear this anecdotally at the U all the time, is they don't care about some of those social issues that Democrats have cared about for decades. They don't view gay marriage as an issue anymore. They don't view abortion as an issue anymore. It's not that they don't care. They just think it's resolved. So it's a little bit tricky that you'd think that they would be aligning with that Democratic Party because of how they feel on some of these social issues. But really, there's a huge question mark over a lot of these younger voters about where they'll go and what that means for parties over the next few decades.
What does it turn on? Do we know yet?
What do you mean? What does it turn on?
Well, I mean, you're saying that there's a big question. Where am I? Abortion doesn't matter anymore. Same-sex marriage doesn't matter anymore. Social issues don't matter anymore. So what's the thing that's going to push them one way or the other is, I guess, what I'm saying. We don't know yet.
I know. It's so difficult to say because some of them supported Bernie and then went to Trump. Yeah. And some of them were hardcore Hillary. And there are some of these niche issues. And I know Quinn surveys and studies this a lot, and so I'm sure he wants to jump in. But it's just so interesting.
Well, I can tell you what I know from last year is that the younger voters were the most unwilling to support the two-party nominees. And that says a lot to me that they didn't like their choices. What that means in terms of where they go, I'm less certain. But I think Morgan's onto something. I think they're less concerned about these social issues. I think they're more even on the Republican side, they're more sort of community oriented. They're more willing to listen to some of these policy options. I think they're more concerned about some of these things that we've been talking about in terms of public lands and Medicaid and other things. I don't know that they're hearing the voice that they need to come down where they're going to come down. I think they're kind of up for grabs, which presents a huge opportunity or a huge liability for both parties, right?
You know, I think there's an opportunity. To think that the next generation of voters are going to come and find us is naive. And oftentimes Democrats say there's a pendulum, and the pendulum has swung so far to the right and it's going to swing back. And I resist that characterization because I think that lulls us into being passive about it. To think that the pendulum is going to come back and find us and all we have to do is sit here and wait, or that in-migration or a new generation is going to mean success for the Democratic Party. There is certainly an opportunity. There's an opening, but we have to be on our game to go out and succeed.
That's Mayor Ben McAdams, Mayor of Salt Lake County. Mayor, thanks for being with us. Jim DeBacchus, Democrat in the State Senate, represents the 2nd District. Glad you're here.
Always great to be here.
Quinn Monson, political scientist, founding partner of the research and data firm Y2 Analytics. Thank you.
Thank you.
For coming up. And Morgan Lyon-Cotti, associate director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics at the University of Utah. Thanks.
Thank you.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.